You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
The State of Recruiting is brought to you by 24/7 Sports and the Horns 24/7 Network of Podcasts. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on the podcast platform of your choice. We also invite you to listen to the other great shows on the Horns 24/7 network, including The Flagship with Taylor Estes and Chip Brown, and The Longhorn Blitz with Jeff Howe and Rod Babers. Thanks for listening. Now on to the show. Welcome back to this week's edition of The State of Recruiting, your weekly Horns 24/7 recruiting podcast. I'm Mike Roach, and I'm joined as always by Hudson Standish. And we've got a big show for you. We're going to talk about all the happenings in the college football world, which is currently shaking at its depths and crumbling all around us. But before we get into that, Hudson, you no hat, no glasses. I'm not sure I'm used to seeing and haircut. I'm not used to seeing you this way.
Yeah, I know exactly. I've got a at the in-laws place right now, so I've got a nice ring light. So I didn't want the glasses reflection. Got a new haircut. I know, a little bit of a different look.
Fresh up. Which,
by the way, I'm sure our audio listeners are just thrilled
that we started off with that.
Exactly.
Freshened up since I last saw you, since we were in we were in Austin, I guess, was the last time I saw you.
Good point. I was about to say H-Town, but you're right.
Yeah, on the tail end of our Houston trip. All right, let's get right into it. To paraphrase a bar from one of my favorite rappers of the early 2000s, Merce, the world has gone crazy since we last spoke.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with NIL and the transfer portal. And I think, like, you could look at a couple of different stories, and it was really funny how it went from very Texas-centric to kind of being able to be an outside observer, and then all of a sudden, this issue had come to the doorstep of Austin once again. So if you're just joining us or you haven't seen the news, let's just kind of start with, to me, where, like, this last week kicked off, and that was the decision for O'Shawn Mathis, the TCU transfer defensive end, coming down to Nebraska and Texas. You know, early on, had some sources around him and felt that it wouldn't be anywhere else but Texas. But in the last month, or really 2 weeks, it was really heavy on, like, hey, I'm not sure what else Texas can do here. They've done just about everything, but I don't think they're going to get him. And, you know, in the end, Texas did not get Mathis, who ended up picking Nebraska. And, you know, I kind of echo that sentiment that what else could they have done? They hosted him four times on visits, including one official visit. I think Texas showed him everything that they could show him, I think, when it comes down to it. You know, whether it be NIL, which I think we're going to have a larger discussion about Texas and NIL here in a little bit, but whether it be that or just kind of his role in the defense, it sucks. I think Texas would have loved to have him, but, you know, they just couldn't win out.
Yeah, and also, you know, we're a pretty PG-rated podcast. Not even though I have a bad tendency to cuss a lot in real life, this might be the one episode where something slips out, because the best way to describe the last, especially 2 to 3 days, has kind of been a shit show. And while we're talking Ashaun Mathis, that's a little bit of a different ball game. That's just a straight up portal recruitment loss head to head with Nebraska. You know, Mike, it got to the point where 24 hours from decision, TCU seemed to be a more credible threat than Texas, which if you would have told me that when Ashaun Mathis entered the portal and all signs seemed to point to him ending up at Texas, I mean, I don't even know what I would have thought. So I don't know. I think you break it. I think you broke it down pretty effectively. It's just a massive loss. And especially when you think about how Texas and Pete Kwiatkowski like to run this scheme, him at the Jack edge spot would have opened up Ofia Gofu to Buck, and then Baron Sorrell is the third rotational guy, which is a lot more intriguing than the possibility of, you know, Ofi and Baron Sorrell and whoever else is in the edge room having to play major snaps. I mean, that was one of the bigger weaknesses on the team that you could have upgraded with, who a lot of media services, and I think even 247 had as the number one portal prospect in ranked. And so it's just a brutal loss, and something that with the local Mainer product, I kind of didn't see coming until the last 72 hours or so, when we started to get word that, okay, you know, this is trending poorly. I mean, Mike, we were at the spring game together, I think a week before his decision, and we were looking at Ashaun Mathis, and we had heard a ton of stuff during spring practice too about, oh yeah, he's basically just one of the guys, and oh, he's back again for his official. Yeah. Like, I mean, God, what a brutal, brutal beat for Texas.
Yeah, obviously a huge area of need for them. And, you know, just weren't able to get it done on that front. I do think that, talking to people, there was a little frustration with the way Ashaun approached the recruitment. You know, a lot of times when you deal with the portal kids, they kind of want the theatrics of it out of the way. You know, they kind of get that out of the way. Maybe because Ashaun wasn't this massive recruit out of high school.
That's what I was about to say.
You know, he decided to enjoy his time, but, you know, it was mentioned to me a couple of times that he treated it more like a 16-year-old than anything
else. I mean, that's to each their own. Like, he's getting a lot of dollars thrown his way, and, you know, again, ton of big time programs were after him, but it's you're right, it is one of those things that it was a deviation from a lot of the other portalers. Like, you know, Orion Watts is not handling his process that way.
Yeah, so just I think frustrating for Texas on the front of pouring as much time into it as they did. I went back and looked. I think he went in January.
Yeah, he did. So even then, the thought was, okay, it's just a matter of time until he ends up at Texas. And that's another reason why, you know, a lot of times you don't want these things to drag out. Like, even with the Ajay Hall commitment, that was one of the worries that I had was, There were talks when he was on campus of, okay, well, he can't even enroll until this date, so why don't we close that thing as quick as possible, make it a public commit, and then go from there. Don't let guys have 3 or 4 months to convince themselves, or let other suitors come in and then, you know, drop a legal bag.
I don't think it's a death sentence, but I always worry when a planned commitment starts getting pushed months and months. I said this last year when
Bryce Anderson's the perfect example.
When Bryce Anderson said he was going to commit in April, I said, okay, that's good for Texas. Yeah. When he initially said, I'm going to push it back to July, I said, okay, that's not great for Texas, but it's not, you know, the worst thing. When he said, okay, I'm going to push it back a little more, I was like, this is, you know, we're having an issue now. But even in April, when it got pushed back to July, I thought this has officially become, it's gone from Bryce essentially being a silent commit to now we're in a real fight here. So I'm never wild about that with a timeline. So, you know, portal losses happen, things happen, you move on. You know, I still think Texas has a really good portal class. Still a couple of guys out there. Isaiah Land from Florida A&M.
That's the one FCS, people are going to be excited to hear about.
Yeah, and yeah, I haven't heard a ton there yet. I do know that Tashard Choice has a good relationship with him, so Texas has a bit of a link there. We'll see kind of if they can get him on campus. But you kind of go back and, you know, we're looking at the May 1st deadline, and okay, all the names that are names are going to be in there, and you kind of almost feel your body relaxing a little bit, right? Because in a couple of days, we're not going to have to report anything, and we're pretty much almost to the finish line of this portal thing, right? And then boom, this weekend hits, and I'm bound to get this timeline wrong. So correct me if I do. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we literally go from the O'Shawn Mathis news to a story breaking that Jordan Addison is considering leaving Pittsburgh
during
the draft for a large NIL deal with USC, which brings about all the questions of tampering and being able to recruit kids on sitting rosters. And you sit there and you, as a Texas fan, and you go, oh, wow, that's crazy, and look at it. And then all of a sudden, news starts to come out that, you know, maybe Jahdae Barron is on the move, and maybe he's going to go and take a bigger payday somewhere. And there was an approach made to Xavier Worthy, which, look, yeah, I think a lot of people would have been upset had Jahdae Barron left, and I think it would essentially hurt this team. I can't imagine what would have happened had Xavier Worthy taken an offer and left.
And understandably so. It would have been one of the more shocking, kind of horrible moments of offseason history. I mean, having the University of Texas's best wide receiver and, you know, probably best second overall best player get poached by another school illegally would have just, I mean, goodness, every single message board would just be, and, you know, of course, like the Reddit college football accounts and those types would get their jokes off, but goodness gracious, could you even imagine? Luckily, Xavier kind of shut that down pretty quickly. And, but yeah, the Jahdae Barron stuff, that was you know, Mike, I feel, you know how when presidents get into office, normally their portrait is, you know, like, oh, he's mm-hmm. young and hopeful. And mm-hmm. then, you know, 4 to 8 years later, they have gray hair and their face looks horrible and aged. That would have been me if the Jahdae Barron saga had played out for like a week more. Because goodness gracious, that was some stuff. I mean, it's almost to the point, too, to where we're normalizing the fact that, you know, we know, and the national college football media knows, that other schools are just tampering with players. Like, they're just like, hey, this is what you'll get here. Just hop in the portal. Like, it's wild that that is normalized.
Yeah, and it's not hard to do.
Not at all.
It's not like this head coach is calling Xavier Worthy, but it's easy to talk through teammates or talk to a parent or an uncle or a coach or somebody like that.
Yeah, there's some random guy that, you know, it somehow has a connect. That is a really good point, because sometimes, and I see it a lot too with like Lincoln Riley getting shots on Twitter, or, you know, Dan Lanning. It's like, guys, these are not the people that are making these connects.
Yeah. No, it is an issue. I talked to a college coach today who said, yeah, it's absolutely an issue. And, you know, that there are people who have taken kind of this legal, like, I guess some people call it NIL, we just call it legal bags. They've taken that and run with the ability to do what they can while there are no rules. So right now there are no rules. Now I do think it looks like, according to a lot of reports, the NCAA is starting to adjust and maybe codifying some things, pulling back on the reins, which, I mean, if we can get into it, but this whole thing's on the NCAA as it is. Like,
absolutely.
They've had years since the O'Bannon case was made. Like, everybody knew this day was coming where players would get paid. So why don't you spend that time putting a structure in place that works for everybody instead of just saying, you know what, you guys wanted this, here it goes, it's Wild West, and then eventually you're going to have to do something about it anyways.
Yeah, and my thing, too, is – a lot of fans right now are of the, and I think understandably so, by the way, are of the opinion, okay, the NCAA had time and they didn't do anything, but what do we do from here on? And the answer is, sure, the NCAA can enforce legislation and try to get this fixed, but everybody knows that they don't have any teeth to actually do anything. Like what? Okay. X school is going to tamper and get six players to go into the portal and drop legal NIL bags. And then what? Their coach is going to get hit with a show clause. I mean, give me like, okay, what does that even do? I mean, it's just to the point now to where it kind of is the wild, wild west. We're going to have to embrace it and adapt. And I just frankly don't trust that the NCAA is going to enact and enforce any legislation to truly make a difference when it comes to this. I think that your best bet as a college football fan, if you are really upset about this, is sadly probably waiting until the NCAA blows up and the eventual super conferences have their own legislation. I mean, that's probably the, you know, 8 years away or so, but I mean, goodness. And granted, that is a pretty pessimistic view of the situation, but at the same time, what, Mark Emmert's replacement is suddenly gonna, you know, just start, yeah, you know, putting on riding into town and putting on an administrative clinic. I mean, come on. The FBI themselves have been struggling to put anybody in jail for the college basketball scandal, where there seemingly is a ton of evidence, but what, like six assistants have maybe gotten punishment for it. I mean, it's just a pretty broken situation, and it's the thing. I love college football so much, but goodness gracious, it's not a great look right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. And if you're a fan of a, you know, Charlotte or a UTSA or Pittsburgh or SMU, you gotta be terrified. I mean,
if I was an Appalachian State or like Louisiana, like programs, G5 programs that run really effectively, I'd be petrified right now.
Yeah, because I mean, you can't, any talent you develop is probably not going to make it through at your school. I mean, you've become a developmental step for these bigger colleges to buy. And I think what's important is there are a lot of people freaking out about this. I think there is a balance coming, because balance always comes to this sort of thing. And you and I have talked about this. If the transfer portal is college football's version of free agency, we've all learned via the NFL, it's not the best way to build a roster is not through free agency. Yeah. And if these collectives and boosters and all these people are spending the money, eventually they're going to get burned, and that's going to cause them to pull back on spending and or at least try to be smarter about it. I think right now we're in the beginning stages where everybody's trying to get everything they can, but I do think a balance is coming, because it just naturally will.
Yeah, and to this point, and I'm going to try to keep this in my mind to potentially clip in the future, I think that you're going to see, too, these collectives start trying to work with personnel departments of, okay, what are the premium positions we need? What is our scale for how much we're going to give an edge versus a safety versus a wide receiver, running back, quarterback? Because I think that we've talked about this before. There are some collectives and some NIL programs and, you know, frankly, some schools out there that are just dropping bags to illegal bags and some illegal to guys that don't really merit them, like, you know. And so I bet that in the next 2 or 3 years you're going to see I like the NFL comparison. You're going to see almost like front offices working with acquisition teams with NIL, which is a little bit of a bleak thought, I guess, but I don't know, innovation always happens, and that seems to be where the next line is going.
Yeah, and so just kind of wrap up the NIL deal. So Jordan Addison is in the portal after all of that, after all the back and forth. Jahdae Barrett is not. Where is Texas with Jordan Addison? People ask a lot, because obviously there's some links there. Brendan Marion was his receiver coach at Pittsburgh. Texas has put together a pretty impressive receiver portal class, but I think it begs the question, Hudson, like, even if you could get Jordan Addison, is that an addition you should make to this roster at this point?
I've thought about it a lot. I think that at the end of the day, you know, don't overthink it. Add the Biletnikoff winner to your roster and figure it out from there. But to anybody who's just thinking that, you know, this is a video game world, which I love, where you can just put four wide receivers out there and constantly rotate and everybody's going to be happy. We know that's not going to happen. So, of course, you add probably the most talented wide receiver in college football to your roster, and you try to elevate that offense. You try to potentially even get it to maybe it was a top 10 offense heading out of the spring. Let's try to elevate it to top three. Let's really go all gas and get him on campus. The problem is when it comes to figuring out roles, and Mike, we were talking about this the other day. So you have Jordan Addison and Xavier Worthy are clearly not coming off the field for the most part. Like, that's who you're building it around. Isaiah Nayor had an amazing spring and a great spring game. He's clearly a really good potential NFL level talent. Jordan Whittington had a fantastic spring and seems to be the guy that they trust the most on third down. They added a Jai Hall, who essentially is a Julio Jones regen athletically, and the staff loved enough to bring him from Alabama when there were a lot of questions. Then there's still so many other options. Plus, Jatavion Sanders at tight end, who was great. Jaleel Billingsley at tight end were fantastic this spring. There are just so many options. It then becomes, how do you fit the puzzle together? My answer and kind of what I've figured out is that's why you have Steve Sarkisian as your head coach, to bring the weapons, figure it out, and produce an offense that's scoring 40 plus a game.
Yeah, and so I don't know. It's been a back and forth subject for me. I know you and I have talked a lot about it. I just personally I think you could convince me either way. Like, what you say about Jordan Whittington is true, but also every year we go into the season kind of depending on Jordan Whittington, and then
yeah, it's a lot easier to make the bet on Jordan Whittington when it's, oh yeah, he's our fourth best receiver. That's awesome. Like, teams would kill for that. But then if he gets injured in the fifth game, you're not going, oh God.
Yeah. So, I mean, it just depends on that. I think him staying healthy is the biggest piece. All right. I think that's, so here's kind of where we are with it. I think that Texas will be involved. I think that all the momentum has kind of been on USC for a reason. I think the kids don't really go into the portal without a plan. For a reason, but I do think that Addison will probably entertain some offers. I think Texas will make a push. We'll see if it's good enough. But I think if you're asking me for my pick right now, I would probably go USC.
Yeah, that seems to be the read. Mike, is there any part of you that wonders? I think that he seriously is considering Texas. Let me first say that. I do think that he's going to give Texas a shot. Is there any part of you that wonders if Jordan Addison and his camp are just going to maybe draw out the process a little bit to make sure that USC doesn't get hammered for any tampering allegations? They already have, but is there any part of you that's like, maybe they'll make it seem like other schools had a little bit more of a shot just so that USC doesn't get hit too hard?
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they just want to, you know, hey, let's fire up the bidding war and see what we can get here. So,
and that's a player too. I just want to be clear. Jordan Addison is worth whatever. Like, it's a one-year rental, sure, but he's worth the money. This is not a, you know, recruit that's getting paid $300,000 or whatever, and you're like, wait, what? No, this is the Biletnikoff winner who has the traits to be a high-level NFL guy. Like, he's worth whatever the bidding war ends up topping out at.
Okay, so that's the craziness of the transfer portal this week. Hopefully we won't have to do that segment every week because I'm pretty tired of it. For those of you listening at home on the podcast, we're going to take a quick break so you can hear from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hudson, let's talk a little bit about just some random recruiting notes. Kind of a slower time right now as we build up to official visit season. But with that in mind, we are getting some, you know, top schools action. And guys, a lot of guys cutting down to kind of that final five, less top 10s and top 12s and more kind of top five. So we're getting an idea for those top schools. Just in the last week or so, Jonte Cook with a top five that included Texas, obviously. Kyle Flood with a – or not Kyle Flood, I'm sorry. Connor Stroh with a top five, including Texas.
Jaden Greathouse. Four.
Yeah, Sadir Mitchell had like a top nine or something, I think, that Ian Reed had a top 10. But guys starting to narrow things down and figure out where they're going to visit this summer. And I think a lot of them with summer timelines.
Yeah, and with Ian Reed, too, I don't know Sadir Mitchell really well, so I don't want to make the same assumption about them, but Ian Reed just strikes me as a kid that's too sweet to make the final cut down to five. Like, he's already planning his official visit, so he kind of clearly does have a five in mind, but he's just always been such a nice kid that I can imagine that he's just like, well, I don't want to cut them out. was there any top schools list that – and this is some real niche recruiting talk. Is there any top schools list particularly that kind of stood out to you? Like, because I have a pick.
Nothing about – like, I mean, like, yeah, I think Ian Reed's list stood out to me because it's gone from
– Everybody.
Yeah, it's gone from, wow, Texas is, you know, they're kind of the first big school living on Ian Reed to, you know, he's joined – but you're joined by Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State. I did – so right before we hopped on this podcast, I did talk to Ian for a little bit. Who told me that he does not have a Texas visit set. He is still figuring out what other visits he's going to take, but said if he had to guess right now, Texas will get an official visit. So,
and you know, Texas will aim to get that last spot. Clemson already has one, I think, for early June. So, you know, Texas is going to want him to schedule the rest of them so they can take that last weekend.
I would say, and I think you're probably – this is your pick, but I would say Jaden Greathouse's list stood out to me, yeah. So I'll let you enumerate on that.
Because I think you have a really interesting look into Jaden Greathouse as a player or as a, you know, recruit and how he's handling his process. So South Carolina is the name of the four that I think will kind of make people a little bit question, but it makes sense when you think about the fact that OU – was one of his first offers along with Texas, and he had a really good relationship with Shane Beamer. So regardless of where South Carolina may or may not be as a program, he's going to bank on relationships. He has OU in there who, you know, is definitely in the mix. And then you kind of have almost a de facto top two of Notre Dame and Texas, which I find pretty interesting. A source told me that the family really loves the atmosphere at South Bend. It was a very influential visit for them. I think that the post-visit high may wear off a little bit, and then you will get a true top two of Texas and Notre Dame. And I saw a couple people on the board, and I addressed it today, that were kind of wondering if Texas was even pursuing Greathouse that much. Yeah, they absolutely love him as a player and want him in this class. Make absolutely no doubt about that. He is a big time priority for Texas.
Yeah, Brody Marion showed up at Westlake today as we're recording this on what is today, Tuesday? Yes. Yeah, Tuesday afternoon. So yeah, he is absolutely a big time guy for them. Honey, we had a
I have one. Okay.
No, I have one. Go ahead.
Not top schools, but this is a guy that we saw at the spring game that got offered, and it's kind of an interesting player to add into the mix at tight end. Spencer Shannon from Mater Dei out in California, big 6'7", 240-pound tight end. That's one that I'm really intrigued by. Mike, you saw him in actually playing 7-on-7, right? And you kind of mentioned that he was high on Texas. Can you talk about that offer a little bit?
Yeah, so Spencer is so funny enough, we were in Las Vegas for the Battle 7-on-7 tournament with 24/7 Sports. I was with our national team, Brandon Huffman, Blair Angulo, and Chris Singletary, and I were in a Chick-fil-A in West Las Vegas on the way to the tournament, making sure we got breakfast in, and saw this giant kid standing in line in front of us for Chick-fil-A as well. And he had an Orange County Elite, which was his team, backpack on. And we were all kind of like, man, who is that kid? And finally, Brandon Huffman just said, hey, OC Elite kid, what's your name? And, you know, we talked there. And Spencer is, you know, he looks just, I mean, like he walked by when we were standing there for the spring game. You got to eyeball him. Looks incredible.
Yeah, looks like right? Official dude, like goodness gracious.
Yeah, and so he and I talked at that tournament. You know, he had said Texas would be a big offer because a lot of his family was from the Houston area. He had lived in that area for a while and really liked Jeff Banks and all that stuff. But Texas wasn't really messing with him a lot then. And then, you know, finally got in contact with him, got him out to campus. He got the offer while he was there. So I think the pecking order at tight end is fairly like set right now. I think Absolutely. Obviously they're all in on Lafayette Kayway. And I think Will Randall obviously is comes with a deal with Arch, I think, if they want him. And so I think Shannon kind of slots in behind those guys if they miss, but really love, you know, the size. And then just watching him move, he's a basketball player as well, plays a little volleyball. So I think he's got good feet for his size. He's not, you know, cement footed as we see.
Absolutely agree. Days. Yeah, no, I loved what I saw from him movement-wise. He kind of surprised me a little bit. And, Mike, I just really like when staffs are proactive with their next targets. So we know that Lafayette's going to decide in August, and we know that Will Randall is a little bit of a handcuff to Arch Manning. So I just really like, okay, if Lafayette decides to go to North Carolina, well – now we have a guy that instead of making up ground when he's either already committed to UCLA or somewhere else, now we already have an inroad with it, and we can then push and try to get that second tight end spot or tight end one spot locked up.
Yeah, absolutely. Hudson, you had an offer today, actually, before we got on to record this, that you really liked, a guy that you've been championing. I think I've written him a couple times in articles about, you know, guys they should evaluate, and kind of out of nowhere, this one dropped. So why don't you tell us about Hunter Osborne?
Yeah. So there are a list of guys that the first time and second time that I met Mike, I was just like, okay, you know, been a fan now in the industry. I've got to get your take on these players. And they were Major Everhart from Amarillo, Tascosa, Bryson Washington from Franklin, you know, Terry Bussey from Timpson. But I always would throw, hey, there's this kid. He's Justice Finkley's teammate named Hunter Osborne. I think he's going to have every offer in the nation. How do we get Texas to offer him? And for the longest time, Texas was one of the few Power Five schools that hadn't offered Hunter Osborne. He is a 6'4", I think now like 270-pound, maybe a little bit lighter than that, defensive lineman. Like I said, he goes to Justice Finkley's former high school, Hewitt Trustville, which is a powerhouse in the state of Alabama. And Bo Davis swung by the school today. He wasn't there. Osborne wasn't at the school, but quickly his head coach called him and said, hey, one of the offers you've been waiting on is here for you. Bo Davis called him and essentially told Osborne, look, I know I'm late to the party and that you're looking to potentially narrow down your list here pretty soon, but give us a chance and you won't regret it. And from my conversation with him, I absolutely think that if Texas and Steve Sarkisian really push hard for him, that he's going to give Texas a fair shot. He told me last June that when his parents would ask him, okay, you want to play college football, you want to, you know, do this, who do you want, where would you ideally like to go? Texas was always a school for him that was one of the first out of his mouth. Then you add in the fact that Justice Finkley and his family rave about Austin and about the education at the University of Texas. And now the Longhorns have a possibility to grab another high four-star when it comes to the 2023 class. It's a really smart offer, and if Texas does put their foot on the gas, they could actually make an inroad here. Normally, when you are the, you know, 35th or 40th Power Five school to offer somebody, the recruitment has already they know kind of what they're going to do, and it's too late. But that's not the case here, and it's really fortunate for the Horns.
Yeah, and a guy that I've liked for since, I mean, I think since you told me about him, I started, and you can notice him when you watched Finkley's huddle last
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely,
you know, yeah. You noticed, hey man, it doesn't appear that Finkley's the only guy that can play on this team. And so I think another SEC body type, another guy that kind of, now you see him as an inside guy. I think he's got a little versatility, right? I mean, would you say that?
Yeah, so he plays a lot of five tech for Hewitt-Trussville, and he's told me that schools kind of see him at five or three. So definitely some versatility. And I just looked, and he's the number 115th ranked player according to 247. Like, Mike, how many, you know, top 120, top 150-ish guys do you get in on this late? Like, it just doesn't really happen.
Especially
not a lot. No. Schools in the mix are Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee. Like, just doesn't really happen.
Yeah, not a lot at all. So, a good offer to see, one that, you know, we were pleasantly surprised by. I know I sent it to you, so, because I wasn't sure if you'd seen it. About the time I sent it to you, I saw that you retweeted it. So, I know you're excited there. All right. Anything else from the week you kind of want to hit on before we get out of here?
I'm trying to think. I don't think so. Oh, one thing, just a minor note, something kind of cool. A recruit that doesn't have any offers yet, but that I've been following for a little bit, Jarvis Anderson out of Taylor, Texas, set the number one triple jump in the for prep athletes in the state of Texas, I think with a 51.1, just an absolutely insane jump. But to qualify for state, and I believe he also qualified in the 300 and 100 meter hurdles, but Jarvis isn't going to be competing at the state meet because he's going to be representing the USA in the Deaflympics. He is, I believe, fully deaf, or at the very least partially deaf, and so just wanted to wish him good luck. It's really, I wish that he was competing at the UIL state meet because I do think that he would take home gold in at least one event, but what an opportunity for him. Really excited. And I don't know, just one of the cooler stories of the week.
It's an awesome story. It's one Hudson put me on to. Jarvis is kind of a do-it-all guy at Taylor. He could play defense, offense, whatever. He's at a small school like that. He's the type of athlete who can just do everything. And to be deaf and to be able to compete still at the high levels that he does, I just think it's a really neat story. And so we wishing Jarvis luck going into the Olympic Games there.
For sure. And any G5 and FCS schools that are listening, check out the tape. It's pretty good. And he has verified athleticism. So for any traitsy G5 and FCS schools, definitely give Jarvis Anderson out of Taylor, Texas a look. 2023.
We definitely know that DPP's from all over G5.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Furman, the Coastal Carolinas, the Wyomings of the world, they're just listening to the state of recruiting. They can't get enough.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Next, we're going to do two episodes this week. That's Hudson has made that call. And so because we didn't do one last week, this is going to be kind of our informational one. We're dropping this Thursday.
Thursday. Thursday. So if you are not on Horns 24/7, if you're not a subscriber, you have probably, I'd say, 10 hours by the time that you're listening to this to subscribe and then post in the mailbag for tomorrow's episode.
Yeah. And so then we're going to do a mailbag for Friday and kind of give you guys two since we didn't get one last week. All right. Anything else, Hudson, before we get out of here?
That'll do it.
All right. Thank you to you guys for listening. Thank you to Taylor Estes for putting the show together and producing it on the back end. For Hudson Standish, I'm Mike Roach. We will see you guys next week.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that He was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount+.